Hello and welcome to Medi-Call episode 233. I'm Corey. Here's Daryl.
Yo.
We are brought to you by manatraders.com. Use the promo code cardknocklifepodcast_07 for 14% off your first 3 months at checkout. Boom. We are going to talk about spoilers today. There is a new set coming out, if you're unaware. If you are aware, there's still a new set coming out. It is. It has nothing to do with the fact that you are aware or not. It's coming out no matter what. This set is sweet. I think many people would agree with that. There's like major fan service being done here. As I'm scrolling through here, I'm seeing like all of this stuff that people seem to love about this game, and some stuff that is maybe a little controversial, even like Phyrexian mana. And like there's sagas, there's quite a bit of like pretty cool planeswalkers of characters that are beloved. There's freaking awesome art on lands and full art lands. It's like, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of mechanics coming back in here that like seem to become, you know, kind of evergreen all of a sudden. Like, I didn't realize saga was a thing that we're gonna see, you know, just showing up now.
Neither did I, which is kind of, I actually like it. I think it's like a very good like storytelling thing. Lets you kind of have like these cards that build incremental advantage that are like better, not better than planeswalkers, like as in better as in higher quality.
Yeah.
But better as in, I feel like the idea of incremental advantage through a saga that eventually dies is a better design that for incremental advantage that doesn't become overwhelming.
Yeah, in relating it to planeswalkers is a good point. I think it really does feel like a planeswalker in that it's like a permanent that kind of like sits on the battlefield like a creature, but like has a shelf life, whereas planeswalkers do. They get attacked to death pretty quickly, especially in like multiplayer games. Or if they don't, you kind of just win the game, you know.
Well, like the concept I'm talking about here is like play it in like modern, right? So if you're playing a planeswalker in modern and it goes unchecked, it just kind of rolls out of control. Whereas if you're playing a saga in modern and it's, you know, it's good and it goes unchecked, it just runs its course.
Yeah, that's true. Now these ones, they've taken a whole new spin on the saga life cycle, and that is they kind of run their course until they turn into creatures in a lot of cases, which is kind of cool.
I actually like that. I think that's a very cool, like a very cool payoff.
Yeah.
And then like creatures are very easy to interact with, so it's not like you can't remove the creature.
Yeah. It's like, it's pretty complex though. And I mean, this game, like I'm scrolling through these spoilers trying to figure out what to talk about. So, you know, we're going to talk about previews today, obviously, but I'm looking at all these cards and, you know, we've played this game for a long time. And I've said this before, like looking at all these cards with all of this text, it's exhausting. Like there's just a lot. And some of these cards I glance at and I start reading them and I'm like, you know what? I give up. Moving on to the next one. And I'll come back to it or whatever, but like there's some that just like you get a couple sentences in and you're like, okay, I get the gist of this. I've seen this one before or whatever. I see how it goes or whatever. But it's like there's not a single card in here that's just vanilla anymore. Everything's just got a big ass wall of text. It does a lot of stuff. Nothing can be simple.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be creatures that were straight up just 4 mana 4/4s or 4 mana 3/4s or 4 mana 4/5s that couldn't block, and it was like, oh, this is easy enough to evaluate. But now everything is just a paragraph. So
I remember the days when the most busted creatures in standard were like a 4 mana 4/4 that said sacrifice a beast, gain 4 life. You know, like,
yeah. Yep,
for those of you kids that don't know, that's Ravenous Bailoff.
Yeah, or go even further back, and you've got a 4 mana 5/5 that says Jazam Jinn deals 1 damage to you during your upkeep.
Deal, absolutely.
So, yeah, right. Like that's pretty straightforward. Anyhow, I'm excited about this, but I guess the thing to keep in mind is like this stuff being introduced, like, you know, set by set, like kind of brings us to this point where it's easier to grok the saga turning into the creature, because we've been there for like the saga being introduced in the first place. But I wonder what the new player experience is at this point, if like you're just starting to play this game now in Kamigawa. Yeah, it's like, whoa, that's a lot.
The double face card, the saga, putting them together, understanding how saga works, like double face cards in CMC for cards that are interacting with it like that. Like, that just seems very difficult.
No corset anymore, baby.
So we've already shilled, correct?
We have. We shilled. We're getting shilled, into it.
All right, let's talk about cards. We're going to kind of be all over the place, I think, from this, Corey. We're going to talk about cards that we can see, seeing some play in internal formats, or just cards that we think are kind of cool. I don't think we're specifically like playing the spoiler game or like targeting that stuff. I think we're just going to talk about cards.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm going to kick it off, though, and I'm going to kick it off with the most obvious one, and the one that I think is going to see play in a gazillion formats, and that is Boseiju Who Endures. It is a legendary land that is functionally a forest, enters the battlefield untapped, and taps for green. And it has channel one green, one in the green, discard Boseiju Who Endures, destroy target artifact, enchantment, or non-basic land that opponent controls. That player may search their library for a land card with a basic land type and put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle. This ability costs one less to activate for each legendary creature you control.
That is like unnecessary to tag that on, to be honest with you, but
I
get the flavor.
It's kind of free, you know. Yeah, it's the legends thing is Kamigawa's deal, but like that makes this, if you put some sort of legend into play, just like G, destroy some egregious permanent, and you can give your opponent like a dual land or a basic land.
But let's be real, like 90% of the time when you're using this, it's gonna be in like an eternal deck where you're like just playing it with. I mean, what legendary creature are you going to have in play when you're going to be doing this in, like, Vintage or Legacy?
For Vintage, you can have things like Leovold, Dahlia.
I suppose Dahlia, that comes to mind.
Yeah, Leovold is also one that is sees some can play. Ragavan.
Ragavan, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, Lelia is a nice little legend. And then you've just got, like, when you cheat things in, like, Gristlebrand.
Okay.
But, you know, you don't really need this card. You don't need this card when you have Grizzle Dad, so.
Destroying your opponent's lands is a big deal, and the flexibility to destroy their artifacts and enchantments is a huge deal. Obviously, they've hedged a little bit by saying basic land type, because those legacy players can still search out their duels, right?
Yeah, it allows for modern to search out shocks. But you can eventually, we talked about this a little before the podcast. You combine this thing with Loam. You can grind your opponent, or Renin 6, you can grind your opponent out of all of their lands with a basic type and leave them with just whatever basics they have. But yeah, the uncounterability is actually pretty large for definitely blue formats, because anything with Force of Will or something like that, killing your opponent's Omniscience. Sylvan Library, you know, their various equipments if they're playing a Stoneforge counterspell deck. And then, like, one of the biggest ones out of the blue decks in Vintage that you tinker into, or two of them, are Bolas's Citadel and Sphinx of the Steel Wind. So Bolas's Citadel just basically means you win the game when you put it into play. So they put a spell on the stack, and you can kill their Bolas of Citadel in response, and most Vintage decks don't have, like, a stifle effect. So you get that free roll. And then, like, Sphinx of the Steel Wind is just, like, pro red and green, and most of the things that kill artifacts are red and green. So this just, like, kills it straight up in a green deck.
I didn't really consider this, how this thing could just kill these giant enchantments. I mean, it's like this unassuming land can just like pick off these 8 mana enchantments. It seems kind of lopsided that you can do that with this like functional forest, right? Just comes into play untapped, taps for green on an average day, but on another day, you know, just like picks off your opponent's like payoff card. That's pretty good. I mean, consider the other parts of this cycle. I think, like, obviously this is a part of a cycle of five colors, five lands. There's the white one can channel two and a white, discard a Ganjo, Seat of the Empire. It deals four damage to target attacking or blocking creature. Costs one less to activate for each legendary creature you control. I mean, I don't think any one of these could be bad if they come into play untapped and tap for a colored mana source. So that one's pretty damn strong.
Yeah.
The blue one.
Yes, it does.
Odawara, Soaring City, 3 and a blue, discard Odawara, Soaring City, return target artifact, creature, enchantment, or planeswalker to its owner's hand, reduced by the legends.
Awesome.
Soken Zan, Crucible of Defiance, 3 and a red, discard Soken Zan, create 2 1/1 colorless spirit creature tokens. Three and a black, discard Takanuma. Mill 3 cards, return a creature or planeswalker card from the graveyard to your hand. Cost 1 less for each legendary creature you control. Of all of these, the green one seems to be the most valuable, the most useful, and it's like the cheapest cost to play in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Of those five, though, which one do you see being the next most valuable?
Probably the white or the black one.
Yeah, same. I think the black one's pretty damn powerful, but it is base 4 mana. It does say legendary creature. Now, if it said legendary permanent, there's like, you know, pair it with like a Liliana or something to reduce the cost.
Legendary?
Yeah, it says no. It says reduced by legendary creatures you control. I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I'm just saying like to reduce the cost because it does cost 3 and a black to activate its channel effect.
Yeah.
Or to pay for its channel. Yeah.
I was thinking about those loam decks and like using endurance to back up your loam to never deck. So
yeah,
like
yeah.
That can grab endurance. Deal. So
yeah.
You can stack your hand with everything you need from loam and then endurance to shuffle everything back into your deck.
Yeah.
Work out just fine.
Okay, so moving on, I'm going to throw another one here. We're going to change gears completely. The next one I want to talk about, the Wandering Emperor, is a planeswalker. 2 white-white for a 3 loyalty planeswalker. This one's particularly interesting to me because it has flash. And when it enters the battlefield this turn, you may activate her loyalty abilities as you can cast an instant. So it's like pretty unique in that way. With 3 loyalty, as a reminder, it has a +1. Put a +1/+1 counter on up to 1 target creature. It gains first strike until end of turn. A -1, create a 2/2 white samurai creature token with vigilance. And a -2, exile target tapped creature, you gain 2 life. I mean, this is like a freaking combat trick, planeswalker. Sweet.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's a flash blocker that you can minus it and then like have a blocker.
Yeah.
And
you can exile the attacker.
You can save it for the next attacker. And if like your blocker trades up or trades with it, is what I'm thinking. Like you get your trade on and then you get to trade up and get it, either pump that blocker next turn, or you can wait and can like chump block and then kill the thing they attack with. You flash it in to eat a creature. And you get a little life gain, which is non-zero.
Yeah, I think this one, like, I think it's most comparable to, like a 4 mana, like, destroy 2 attacking creatures type of spell, because it doesn't have, like, a payoff, like, ultimate ability. So, like, you know, you can just use it for, like, you know, to pick off attackers. As long as you can, like, keep it going, you can keep, you know, taking care of business. But, obviously, like, when you are casting it, they've already declared attackers, so they're not attacking it the first turn you're able to use it, which is really cool. So you've got control with it for 2 turns where you can basically determine what it's going to do, assuming your opponent doesn't just have like a direct damage burn spell to like pick it off. You know what I mean? So they like send in their clowns, you pop it into play and pick off one of their attackers. They've already declared, you know, who they're attacking. They can't redirect it to the Wandering Emperor. So then you've got your next untap step. You can put the 2/2 into play and, you know, get some value out of that.
I mean, I figure the way you'll actually do it is you'll let them declare their attackers. So, like, if they have something that the 2/2 eats, you can make the 2/2 eat the creature and then untap and exile their biggest thing, and so you get this trade's 2-for-1 straight up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you gain 2 life. So I mean, I had this on my list of things to talk about. It's a really cool design of like give this thing flash and let you use it and then like have it roll downhill.
Yeah, it's, I mean, super flexible. I think the thing to keep in mind, though, is just, like, you can't evaluate, you can't put it in the same slot as, like, a Gideon or whatever that's got, like, well, maybe Gideon's a bad example, but any other, like Planeswalker that's kind of follows the more standard format of, like, +1 for value, like, minus something for a creature, and then, like, some ultimate ability. Because it just doesn't have it. It's more like the Elspeth type of, you know, like the 4-mana Elspeth type of format where it's, like, dudes, pump, and some kind of like other thing, you know,
just
some mid-rangey stuff that just kind of sticks around for a while. This next card I bet you have on your list too. So let me just read off Farewell. Is that on your list?
Go ahead. I did not have it on my list.
Oh, okay. This is a Seb McKinnon art, and I think it's one of his last ones. So I think people are pretty excited that it was called Farewell. The card is gonna be a commander staple. I just had to include it for that reason. I think it's like by design. I wanted to just talk about this one. I think it's a little sad because it's just like too obvious to me. But here it is. It's 4WW for a sorcery. Choose one or more. Exile all artifacts. Exile all creatures. Exile all enchantments. Or exile all graveyards.
Yep.
It's like, you have problems? Okay, this can deal with them. Okay. You know, like, it doesn't take a whole lot of creativity to just include a Farewell in your deck. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to, like, do any maneuvering to just play this one card and be like, okay, I'll just remove this element of the game, this element of the game. Okay, graveyards too? Yeah, okay, we'll get rid of that. That might be a problem later, right? So there's no, like, you know, there's none of that, like, you have to evaluate drawbacks and, like, basically deal with drawbacks on a card like this. The only drawback is it costs 6 mana, and when you're playing Commander, it's not really a problem.
No.
Definitely a powerful card, and a lot of people are going to want to have it. So,
yeah, absolutely a board wipe that's going to jump into most Commander decks. I think it's going to replace, like, Austere Command.
Yeah.
Because you get most of the modes.
Yeah, better than Austere, for sure. All right, what do you got, Daryl? All
right. I'm going to close out the Wandering Emperor here. I have a Commander's only card that came out that I wish was Modern legal, or at least Corey does.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I know what you're talking about.
Swift Reconfiguration. It's a white mana enchantment that has flash, enchant creature, or vehicle. Enchanted permanent is a vehicle artifact with crew 5, and it loses all other card types. This is a very obvious combo with the card Devoted Druid. So I'll explain how the layering stuff works. Thank God for having taken my judge test so that I understand this. So you can flash this in onto Devoted Druid. And it will become a vehicle with crew 5. Well, vehicles are just artifacts. Artifacts have summoning sickness, but the rules of Magic say that only creatures are affected by summoning sickness. So that means you can tap your Devoted Druid for green mana, activate its activated ability to put a -1/-1 counter on it, and untap it. And tap it again for a green mana, and you can do this an infinite number of times to make infinite green mana. Kind of another
two-card
combo to do the Devoted Druid shenanigans.
If this was Modern legal, I would spend the time to try to determine whether or not it would be just like straight up better than Vizier in that circumstance. In a vacuum it is, but it's not a creature, so you can't get it off of, like, Collected Company or any other, like, creature toolbox cards. But, like, the fact that it can be used as, like, functional removal for, like, big attacking creatures on the opposing side is great. And the fact that you can do it, like, in, like you said, bypass the summoning sickness that Devoted Druid has is really cool. I don't know if it's really worth going down that road right now, because is this something that Legacy players would be interested in doing, or is it just not good enough for Legacy? I don't know.
I don't think it is good enough for Legacy.
Like, is there a reliable enough way to find a 1-mana enchantment? Like, is there a creature that can search it out and put it in your hand or something?
There's Enlightened Tutor.
Yeah, that came to mind too. That can't be good enough, though, right? Like, you don't want to be playing that in that deck.
No.
Yeah. But you could pair it, like, Enlightened Tutor in, like, a Heliod combo deck, and I don't know, maybe there's something there, but that's maybe I'm crazy. I don't know.
No, I don't think you're crazy.
So, all right. So there's that.
Yeah, but that's the Corey special.
Okay, thanks for including it. That's definitely a cool card, and it's certainly going to see play in, like, Commander. It's powerful.
For sure.
I'm sure there's more combo stuff out there than Devoted Druid. We just haven't found it yet, because that seems like a way to just break creatures wide open that have, like, abusable activated abilities. So, I put on... well, I'm going to skip this one. I have Jyn Gitaxis, Progress Tyrant, while we're on the Commander tangent here. You got this one too?
I don't, but you can fire away on that one.
Okay, 5 blue-blue for a 5/5. This is the first of the Phyrexian series. There are 2 Phyrexian cards in the set. So, like I mentioned, the controversial fan service. I think some people are really into Phyrexians, and others are like, oh, God, remember what happened to Gitaxis and Probe and all of the similar... birthing pod and all that. We had to ban that shit. So anyways, this guy has no Phyrexian mana, but he is a Phyrexian. 5/5 legendary creature, Phyrexian Praetor. Whenever you cast an artifact, instant, or sorcery spell, copy that spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. This ability triggers only once each turn. What? That's insane. Okay. When an opponent casts an artifact, instant, or sorcery spell, counter that spell. This ability triggers only once each turn. This seems no fun, mm-hmm. Daryl.
I mean, that's very good. It's functionally a soft Arayo, right?
Yeah.
Because Arayo countered all the spells, or countered the first spell you cast, and this is going to do the same thing.
Yeah, and the jerkwad play in this card is certainly going to have backup counter magic in their hand to take care of the second spell that you've got packed to deal with this guy. So you better get 3 and 4 removal spells ready if you really want answers to this guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be a miserable commander.
Not going to be fun to play against.
So there's that. I don't think we need to talk too much about that, but it's a card that exists in the set. I'm sure it's going to be a Chase Mythic, so keep an eye out.
Yeah.
All right, what do you got?
All right, I got, since we're going to talk about Phyrexian things, I'm going to pivot and talk about Tamayo Completed Sage. I don't know why I emphasized it that way. There's that eat mean, in there somewhere.
That means she's ironed the fold in her pants.
I don't know. So, Legendary Planeswalker Tamayo for 2 green, blue, and green, blue Phyrexian hybrid, and it's completed. Green, blue hybrid can be played with green, blue, or 2 life. If the life was paid, this Planeswalker enters with 2 fewer loyalty counters. So, important to notice. So, you can get a 5-mana Planeswalker with 5 loyalty, or a 4-mana Planeswalker with 3 loyalty. +1, tap up to 1 artifact or creature. It does not untap during its controller's untap step, so the ice ability from Tamayo. -X, exile target non-land permanent card with mana value X from your graveyard. Create a token copy of that card. And then -7, create Tamayo's Notebook, a legendary colorless artifact token with spells you cast cost 2 less to cast, and tap draw card.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean... So it's just kind of got a very consistent effect of just like plus do a Tamayo thing, minus do a Tamayo thing, kind of getting the 4-mana Tamayo that picked the card up out of your graveyard, you're kind of making a token copy of it instead. And then the -X is functionally trying to be at win condition. Making your spells cheaper is nice, and then like if you can figure out how to tap or untap this artifact, or make more copies of tokens. You can make a bunch of these and make your spells super cheap and draw a bunch of cards.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems pretty damn strong. I mean, you have to evaluate it as a 4-mana Planeswalker because that 2 life ain't no thing, right?
It is not. Evaluating it as a 2-mana Planeswalker or 4-mana Planeswalker with 3 loyalty is a lot weaker.
But it has 5. It's 5 loyalty.
No. If you pay the life, it enters with 2 fewer loyalty.
Oh, yeah. See, I misread that. Yes, thank you. That is a big deal. Okay. Good point.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah. That said, I don't think this card's very good.
yeah, if it was a 5 mana... or 4-mana 5 loyalty Planeswalker, it would be insane.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You know, they're doing the thing with the Phyrexian text for this one and the Jenga Taxis. This card has an awful lot of text on it. I can't believe there's I can't believe they're trying to do that. It's amazing to me that you could try to read, like, you could try to follow what this thing freaking does without, like, having all that in front of you. It's kind of insane.
Yep, it's anyways. Very tough to follow.
Okay. So there's Tamiyo. It's a cool design, but I think they're trying to experiment in with some very careful parameters here for it with this Phyrexian Mana Planeswalker scenario. It is pretty clever that the two fewer loyalty comes as a penalty for, you know, the reduced cost. So that's a good way to do it.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, what do you think of Eater of Virtue? I think this card kind of wants to be this set's Umezawa's Jitte.
I have this card on my list, so go ahead and fire it up and read it.
This card's pretty sweet. So it kind of comes off to me, when I first read it, I thought this was kind of like just straight up like a commander card. Like, it just kind of has that sort of appeal to it. But the more I thought about it, the more I liked it. So this is one mana for a legendary artifact equipment. Whenever equipped creature dies, exile it. Equipped creature gets +2/+0. As long as the card exiled with Eater of Virtue has flying, equipped creature has flying. The same is true for First Strike, Double Strike, Death Touch, Haste, Hexproof, Indestructible, Lifelink, Menace, Protection, Reach, Trample, and Vigilance. The equip cost is only one, though. So, like, it's kind of like a Chromantiflare type of, like, card. But, you know, in a... without the exile aspect of it, like, one mana for an equipment and one mana to equip for +2/+0 is pretty strong. You know, it's a pretty big boon to have consistently lying around. And then the bonus of, like, it probably will include trample pretty easily. It could probably include flying if you build your deck right. Uh-huh. You know, like, you might get, like, two or three of those tags added onto this thing. So yeah. I think this card could be pretty cool. You know, if you build for it. The problem is it's a legendary artifact, so it's a little tricky to build a deck specifically for Eater of Virtue, assuming that, you know, like, you can, like, play one at a time.
I think you're being very ambitious here.
Yeah, I'm not saying you build an Eater of Virtue deck, but if it happens to slide into a deck, I'm definitely gonna, like, give it a shot.
Okay, I'll buy that. I just don't see it really fitting in much.
All right. Well, I am the type of person that would play a Chromantiflare deck, so maybe I'll just try this in there.
Yes. If you're the kind of person that would do that, this is where you fit in perfectly.
All right. What do you think of these? This cycle with the X and a colored mana instance?
They
and sorcerers?
Are quite interesting, actually. Yeah. I didn't open them all up, but I just kind of looked at them.
It's a series of rares that cost X and a colored mana, and you can reduce the cost as you cast them by exiling any number of cards of that color, and it reduces the cost by 2 for each one you exile this way. So the black one, for example, is X and a black for March of the Wretched Sorrow. I think this one is particularly good, actually. As an additional cost to cast the spell, you may exile any number of black cards from your hand. It costs 2 less to cast for each card exiled this way. So say you play this. Pay 1 black mana and exile 2 black cards from your hand. You are casting this with X equals 4. March of the Wretched Sorrow deals X damage to target creature or planeswalker, and you gain X life. So, you know, it doesn't damage a player, which is kind of junky, but damage to a planeswalker or a creature, gain X life, could finish off a planeswalker or a creature if you've got a glut of cards in your hand to get through. The white one deals with enchantments. What does the blue one do? I think the white one's pretty decent too. The white one says, I had it just a second ago. It says, exile target artifact, creature, or enchantment with mana value X or less.
Yeah, the white one is pretty decent. Because is it an artifact or creature?
Yeah, exile target artifact, creature, or enchantment. Yeah, so it gives you an awful lot of flexibility.
I mean, you're just eating sagas for one mana, which is very exciting.
Yeah. I mean, you can just hard cast them too in the late game, which is the thing. Like, if you, like, I think at the very least in limited they're gonna be good, but it's hard to evaluate these in anything else. I'm not really sure what to think of them, but I don't know. I guess I originally thought this black one could target players, and now after rereading it, it doesn't, and it's a lot less exciting than I had initially thought.
The white one is the most exciting, and it's not particularly super exciting. It's just kind of, that's neat.
Okay. All right, well, let's move on. Never mind.
I'm a just cool commander card that I see being really fun. And also highlighting one of their new mechanics. It is the reality chip. It is one and a blue for a legendary artifact creature equipment jellyfish.
Nice.
You may look at the top card of your library anytime. As long as the reality chip is attached to a creature, you may play lands and cast spells from the top of your library. Reconfigure for two and a blue. Attach to target creature you control or unattach to a creature. Reconfigure only as a sorcery. While attached, it is not a creature. So I don't know about the ruling of how it works when the creature it is attached to dies. I would assume that it dies with it. But I don't know. So that is one we don't have to... So, based on the fact that it's actually an equipment, I would assume that it actually doesn't. That it doesn't die.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as it is attached to a creature, you may play lands.
So it's future sight if it's attached to a creature.
Yeah.
Which is just a cool idea. Like the idea of, hey, here's an artifact creature, but it can also be an equipment. And that's cool. Like, to me, like, that's the idea. It's like, hey, here's the thing with an effect, and you can kind of hide it away onto other creatures if you play your cards right. And so it's actually really cool.
Yeah, I think it's I think it continues to be a creature when it becomes unattached.
It does.
Okay.
But no, worth noting that it gives it no stats. So it doesn't say that it, when it's attached to a creature, it gets like +0/+4 or anything. So basically, as far as it reads, you get no bonus stats.
Okay. Yeah, that's really sweet. Conceptually, too, like equipment jellyfish, like this thing, like just goes around and like zaps into the host. It's kind of cool. Yeah. The art really brings it home.
Yeah. So I'm gonna hit another. This one I actually think might see some play.
Yeah.
Oh, this is actually fancy because I didn't think of this, which is Lion Sash. So it's one and a white for an artifact creature equipment cat. Pay a white exile target card from your graveyard. If it was a permanent, put a +1/+1 counter on Lion Sash. Equipped creature gets +1/+1 for each +1/+1 counter on Lion Sash with reconfigure 2. So you can cast Stoneforge and go find the Lion Sash. So you can cast Stoneforge and go find an actual creature that has the ability to interact with your opponent's graveyard.
It's basically Scooze, right?
Just without the life gain. White Scooze.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty damn cool. And you can give it flying, essentially, by making it an equipment put on a flying creature.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, well, I mean...
Which, like, Scooze didn't have good evasion.
No, it didn't. And so, like, you lose a point of power, but you get the rest of them. And, like, just also being able to tutor up a creature with, like, a straight-up creature with Stoneforge Mystic. Because, like, your living weapons are 5, 6, 7 mana. You know, you're not casting those realistically. Nettlesist, you will. The rest of them, probably not.
Right.
But, like, just, like, tutoring this guy up to play it on turn 3 if they kill your Stoneforge and, like, start eating up permanents, like, that seems pretty good.
Yeah, this one is absolutely going to see play in Modern at the very least, but probably more. I mean, I think... So White already has a pretty easy time of dealing with graveyards, given that it's got, like, Rest in Peace and stuff, and also has the Exile removal spells, but the fact that this is an equipment, I think, is a big deal.
Yeah.
The fact that it's an artifact is a big deal, so I think there's something there. Affinity may even be interested.
Yeah. Also, just worth noting, the small thing about this is, you know, Scooze only grew off creatures. This grows off of eating fetch lands.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is a big deal because it's permanence. So, like, With Skooze, like, unless they were doing, like, Delirium stuff or had Tarmogoyf, you weren't really eating their fetch lands. Like, you just kind of like, okay, you get a fetch land, fetch a bunch of creatures.
Right.
Like, eating the fetch lands to pump this thing and then slapping it on your creatures is like, oh, okay, well, now we are cooking with all sorts of gas.
But I will say, though, having played a lot of Skooze in my time, that life gain is a big boon to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I wouldn't say this is strictly better than Skooze, because I think you're definitely going to miss that life gain.
Yeah, absolutely.
And purely being in green, exiling cards from a graveyard in green is a big deal too. So anyways, it's something to consider.
Absolutely.
What do you think of this red spell, Explosive Singularity? 8 red for a sorcery. It's a mythic. Okay. So it's 10 mana. It does 10 damage to any target, but as an additional cost to cast the spell, you may tap any number of untapped creatures you control. It costs 1 less to cast for each creature tapped this way.
I mean, you gotta have tokens. It's not. I don't think it's playable in like any real formats.
No. I'm just wondering, like, is there a deck out there?
10 is too many.
Yeah. It seems like maybe it's too much of a hoop to jump through for a card that doesn't just kill your opponent. And, like, you can't just, like, half-kill someone with a spell like this.
Yeah.
And you don't want to, like, be dealing with, like, doubling it. So maybe it's not enough. But there's some decks that can realistically do this. Like, I'm thinking of, like Storm. If you just do, like a real half-assed Empty the Warrens, you know? And then you can just, like, Explosive Singularity them. But that seems like a really crappy setup. So it's probably not it. Or, you know, in Historic, like, the Goblins decks could probably cast this, but it's like, then you've got a bunch of Goblins anyway, you're probably winning, so that's probably not it. So, I don't know. It's an interesting card, but don't really know where it belongs. So.
Yeah. Yep.
Maybe all right. Dredge. Maybe Dredge, you know, that kind of thing. Like, you get them down to 10, you get a bunch of creatures, and then you get a board stall. You could, I don't know. Yeah. Anyways. Am I crazy? I'm crazy. Okay.
No.
All right, what else you got?
I'm going to trim down my cards here a little bit. I got 5 more here.
Oh, okay. I only got 1 left, so you do a bunch.
Okay. Well, some of these are going to be kind of easy, I think. This one is Experimental Synthesizer. It's red for an artifact. When it enters the battlefield or leaves the battlefield, exile the top card of your library until end of turn. You may play that card. 2 in a red, sacrifice it, create a 2/2 white samurai creature token with vigilance. Activate only as a sorcery. So it's an Ichor Wellspring.
Mm.
That has an inherent sacrifice ability built into it.
Yeah.
And it's a mana cheaper. So, like, you know, is there something here? I don't know. And, like, you get some like creature beatdown tokens. It's like on the cusp of something I want to say is good. It's not there, I don't think, but like it's so close.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point. I didn't even like consider this one, but you're absolutely right. I think the fact that it costs red mana is going to matter, though. So that's something to keep an eye out for.
Absolutely. I don't doubt that. I'm just saying, like, in the decks that are Ichor Wellspringing, you can easily make your mana base make red mana.
Yep.
Like, it's not a problem. So, like, but just the idea of, like, this seems real close. And if there's a good way to sacrifice for profit, like, this thing seems like it's there. Like,
yeah.
Need to draw 2 cards for 1 mana. Like, even if you don't get to keep them in your hand, like, if you're milling past lands, cool. I didn't need those lands, probably. Neat. Uh-huh. And, like, you can even play this on turn 2 to hit your land drop. Like, a cantrip to try and hit your land drop. That seems fine, too. So I think it's close. It's cool. I don't know what's there for it right now. I don't really want to talk about that Tezzeret anymore. This card is really going to be cool for Vintage, I'm sure, but this feels like a very good commander card, too. Like a very good commander, which is Temeshi, Reality Architect. Whenever one or more non-creature permanents is returned to hand, draw a card. This ability only triggers once each turn. Return a land you control to its owner's hand and pay white plus X. Return target artifact or enchantment card with mana value X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Activate only as sorcery. So this is going to be your Azorius enchantment and artifact deck commander. You can reanimate your combo pieces by paying white X, bouncing your lands. So you can start with like pay to return Soul Ring, be net mana neutral, bounce a land. And then use your Soul Ring to pay three and return your two mana thing, bounce a land.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
In formats where, you know, zero mana artifacts like Voxen and Black Lotus are a thing, like you can tap your land, bounce it, make a white, return your Lotus, make three white. As long as you have a land in play, you can return Lotus and make infinite mana that way. So, like, fast bond plus Lotus plus this makes infinite mana. And then, like, you can reanimate things like Underworld Breach. So, like, there's just all sorts of, like, combo bullshit here.
Yeah.
That's just all that really can be said. Like, two and a white, reanimate Underworld Breach, do Underworld Breach things. Like, bounce your land. Okay, yeah. It's just some nonsense chicanery. If you can combine this with something that helps you play extra lands, like, yikes. This is not a reasonable Magic card. And even in Commander, just, like, if your solid board gets blown up, you can just, like, pay all in and bounce a land to, like, return some really powerful artifact to play. Like, you can get your Planar Portal back, or your Ring of Three Wishes, or your Mycosynth Lattice, or something like that. Uh-huh. So, like, even on the big side of things, like, you're getting this, like, repetitive reanimate that, oh, by the way, when you reanimate your thing, it draws you a card because you bounced up a permanent. You bounced a non-creature permanent. So, like, you get a free cantrip on top of it. It's like, put your best thing into play, hit your land drop, draw a card.
Yeah, there's just, like, way too much, like, access to this type of thing in blue and white for this stuff not to be good. There's like just like a lot of redundancy for this, and then there's a lot of really good like cheap like bobbly type of stuff to just abuse with this for value to get over the fact that you're playing a singleton format. And this would just be so easy to make happen in Commander. It's nuts.
Yeah, like this is gonna be a sweet one, and I do want to figure out if there's some way to like break this in Vintage, right? Like, can I get enough lands in the play where I can, like, bounce a land, return my Lotus to play, break my Lotus, bounce a land, return my Time Bolt to play, like, break, you know, return my Voltaic to play or whatever, take all the turns. Like,
oh, you gotta try this. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
please.
This is, the Oath of Druids to dump all your stuff in the yard, put this thing into play, and, like, start bouncing permanent, like, start bouncing your lands to, like, put permanents in play.
Return your Urza's Saga, reset it.
That's not even remotely reasonable, but like something like Banty, like fast bond style deck, or like you don't care if you're bouncing your Forbidden Orchard and giving your opponent tokens, if you're just killing them, like it doesn't matter, like that you are giving your opponent Orchard 1/1s, you know, like you'll just kill them eventually. So yeah, like this seems like a thing you can do.
Yeah. Wait, so real quick, can you return your Urza's Saga in response to the last, like when it gets to chapter three, you search your library for an artifact.
You get the tutor. You get the tutor, absolutely. So you could bounce your Saga to your hand, pay white and bounce your Saga to your hand, float a mana off of this or make a token, get your tutor effect, and then like replay your Saga. Yeah. Like,
okay, so you wouldn't have to sacrifice it. And
sacrifice it as a part of the resolution of the third, like having the third chapter resolve.
Yeah,
so
see, that's
like
nasty.
You get the third chapter regardless, and then you sacrifice it as a part of the completion of the resolution of the third chapter. So like, yeah, I've done this. I've seen this done in Vintage where like people will sacrifice their Urza's Saga for value or bounce their Urza's Saga in response to like that trigger and still get their tutor and get their Lotus or whatever. Like, yeah, this is not a reasonable thing you can do. So like, I could see this kind of being a Modern deck if there's like good stuff to reanimate, because you could reanimate your Sagas. Like you could literally just like pay a white, bounce land, put Saga in the play because it's an enchantment.
Yeah. Damn.
Like, yeah. Welcome to the party. This is unreasonable. I can't wait. And you get the cantrip after putting your Saga in the play. Like, I can't wait to see all. Oh, you cannot do it. You cannot do this actually and bounce Saga because it says only as a sorcery. Reading important. So you cannot bounce your Saga.
Oh, it does. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
You could
so
return
I guess
your Saga, though.
The best you could do, you could just do it before the tutor.
No, you can't because it's a sorcery. So, like, but why bounce your Saga before the tutor when you can just use this to reanimate your Saga?
Right. That's fair. Yeah. I mean, but I'm saying, yeah, I don't know. I don't know why you'd want to do that. I guess if you just want to generate a bunch of tokens, you can do it at sorcery speed, though, is my point. I don't know. Yeah, maybe you don't want to do that. You can just put it back into play. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know, man. Maybe you got some Frex and Dreadnought shit going on in your graveyard, and that's better. I don't know. Okay. Anyways.
And I got just some vintage ninjas. What do you got? Let's go to you, and then I'll...
I got a ninja. Maybe this is one of your ninjas, too. This card, I don't know if it's going to see play in any constructed formats or not, but it's freaking cool, and it's Nashi Moon Sage's Scion.
Nope, I do not know.
Okay, well, at the very least, this is a commander card. One black for a 3/2 legendary creature, Rat Ninja. It's a mythic. It has ninjutsu, 3 and a black. So that's kind of the kicker here. That's a pretty steep ninjutsu cost, but the payoff is big time. When it deals combat damage to a player, exile the top card of each player's library. Until end of turn, you may play one of those cards. If you cast a spell this way, pay life equal to its mana cost rather than paying its mana cost.
Whoa.
That's cool, right?
That part's busted.
Yeah. Yes. So, I don't know. Like, it's kind of too much of a gamble to play in, like, a constructed format. But in Commander, I mean, like, your opponents are playing some really powerful stuff, and you've got a lot of expendable life totals. So if you're playing, like, a five-player game, like, you're bound to hit something really nasty on the top of someone's deck. And you're like, oh, yeah, I will pay 6 mana for an extra turn, you know?
You mean 6 life? You don't have to pay mana at all.
Or six life. Yeah, 6 life. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Beastie, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Boundless Realm seems like a good one.
Not to mention it's like a freaking cyborg cat with some like ninja tools and stuff. So some of the art in this set is just ridiculous. There's a red card that's like a DJ at like a rave or something. Have you seen that guy? Tawashi Song Shaper. He's a common. He might actually be pauper playable. He's like, whenever another artifact enters the battlefield, he gets +1/+0. He's a 2-mana 2/2. It's like, that's kind of a good card. But you look at the art, he's like freaking Jet Set Radio Future or something. He's like spinning like records and stuff. It's crazy.
That's awesome.
I never thought I'd see this in Magic, but here we are.
Yeah, I have 2 Dimir ninjas to close this out then.
Okay, go for it.
All right, the first one is Satoru Umezawa. 1 blue-black for a legendary creature, human ninja, 2/4. Whenever you activate a ninjutsu ability, look at the top 3 cards of your library, put one of them into your hand and the rest on the bottom in any order. This ability only triggers once each turn. Each creature card in your hand has ninjutsu 2 blue-black.
Okay, we already talked about this guy in a previous podcast, but he is really good.
Still like him. Forgot okay. We talked about him.
Commander, right?
Yeah, Commander only. This other one is Commander really only, but it's not going to be the Commander. It's going to be like a card in the 100 that you flicker a lot. And that is Katose the Silent Spider. Whenever Katose the Silent Spider enters the battlefield, exile target card other than a basic land card from an opponent's graveyard. Search that player's graveyard, hand, and library for any number of cards with the same name of that card and exile them. That player then shuffles for as long as you control Katose. You may play one of the exiled cards, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast it. So basically, you're getting to free roll like free cards out of your opponent's graveyards.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
This card's sweet.
Yeah, so like you're not gonna do the exile clause. Like the exile clause would be really cool in like actual formats with 4 ofs where like you hit your opponent's like really powerful 4 of that you have managed to deal with, cut the leg out from under them and then put one of them into play. But I wouldn't even do that because you don't want to put that card back in their graveyard if they can recur it. So it's like, you know. That sort of deal. But like in Commander, like I'm 1000% down with like playing this thing and getting my opponent's big splashy spell that I couldn't cast because it's off color, and then like blinking this thing and getting access to it again or some other spell my opponents have, and like I will pay the mana. I am totally fine with that. Like that seems like a thing that I'm 100% interested in doing, because like that, like just getting access to powerful cards in your opponent's graveyards as they start to stack up as the game continues, like that seems like something I'm very interested in. And just like getting a free soul ring is, you know, nothing to scoff at.
You know what this guy's for?
What?
This guy's for my human pod deck in Standard.
Ooh.
You know, remember my Pyre of Heroes deck that I was trying to force?
Yeah.
This guy's this guy's my payoff human right here on top of the curve. I'm getting up to 5 and I'm getting Katose.
And you're getting some cool thing from your opponent?
Yeah. Actually, there's a lot of humans in this set. I ought to look at that again.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's all I got. I mean, that's all the cards I can think of. Like, I'm sure there are others that we missed or that are fun, but that's kind of what I have mentally.
Okay. Yeah, man. That's this is a cool set. I dig it. I don't know. I don't know how, you know, how people are feeling about the aforementioned complexity curve, but I think generally speaking, everyone's pretty excited about this one. I do like the evolution of sagas and the evolution of equipment and stuff, and it seems fitting for this particular environment. It's cool. Yeah. The reconfigure thing is really kind of clever for this, but man, this it's like all over the place. This like Neo Tokyo type of thing is just it. Like, I don't even know what to make of this world. It's just everything, you know?
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, like, there's a lot of stuff going on in Neo Tokyo. Like, I wouldn't expect this to be any different. Yeah, I think it's well designed. I think there's a lot of cool cards.
I wouldn't say it's cohesive. I would say it's colorful. So we'll enjoy that. But I think that's kind of the fun of it too. I don't think it needs to be cohesive, which maybe was the problem with the original Kamigawa. It was too cohesive. It was like just too much of the same. You know, it wasn't very entertaining because it was just like you just sort of had to force the, like when you're playing limited, it's just so much, you know, of the you're playing the spirits, like the soul shift plans and like the spirits cost reduction and stuff like that. And the splice onto Arcane was such a big deal, but now it's like you really have some choices to make because it's just good cards that are just kind of how do they work together, and
yeah, you know, like how can we amalgamate all of these things into a functional deck?
Yeah, yeah, but it feels more and more like Hearthstone every day.
I was about to say, I feel like I'm playing. There's some cards here that might be Hearthstone playable.
Yeah.
Although I haven't played Hearthstone in so long, I don't know what's playable or not. So, you know.
All right, man. Well, we'll wrap up on that. But looking forward to seeing how this plays out. Thanks for listening.
Absolutely. Take it easy, guys.
Bye.
Modern Metacall is a production of CarKnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with CarKnockLife offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CarKnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to ManaTraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading CarKnock Life content.